This episode was recorded on the country of the Darug and Gundagara peoples, the traditional owners of the Blue Mountains region of New South Wales. I pay my respects to elders past and present, and would like to acknowledge any other Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander person listening to this podcast. Welcome to Weekend Birder. I'm Kirsty Costa. Can you believe we're up to episode 67 already? Wee! If you are new to this podcast, welcome aboard. We talk about Australian birds, birdwatching, and all that other fun stuff. In this episode, we are joined by Freya Noss. During the week, Freya works on rural revegetation projects. In her free time, she creates artworks of the beautiful Australian flora and fauna that she encounters in her daily life. Here is how Freya became a lifelong birdwatcher.
I've been interested in birds as long as I can remember. I grew up in the Blue Mountains west of Sydney on a property that backs onto the bush. So there were always lots and lots of birds that were feeding or nesting in our backyard, and I would see them on our bushwalks. Dad really loves birds as well, so he would be identifying them for us and teaching us about them. And at one point, my mom bought me a bird book. So I've always loved them. And a few months ago, I actually found a little book that I made when I was 8 years old that was full of drawings and facts that I knew about water birds and freshwater animals after we went on this school excursion. So it was kind of funny to find all my little scribbles from back in the day. When I was in my early 20s, I went on a six-month internship at a research station in the Peruvian Amazon. So that was really amazing opportunity. I got to learn a lot about studying and identifying birds. We did a lot of surveys of lots of different animals there, but a lot of bird surveys because there's incredible bird biodiversity there. So we did nist netting and I ran visual surveys of the clay licks where macaws and other parrots would come to eat some of the clay. And I'd also run some early morning bird and mammal surveys. So mostly walking around the forest and identifying them by call because it's really hard to spot birds in the rainforest there because it's so dense. It's funny, some of the birds are very similar, but some of them are completely different. And so it's really, really crazy place. It's really amazing.
It is really cool the way that Freya combines her art and her environmental science qualifications together. Les Robinson calls this passion mashing, which I think is a very apt way of describing what Freya does.
Birds are amazing art subjects. There's so many different birds to draw just in Australia, you know, and the rest of the world. They're all so unique. And even with the same bird, you can explore so many different aspects about them. So you can be exploring how they move or fly, their colours and patterns, their iridescence or their camouflage patterns. You can look at their behaviour. I really love exploring the visual complexity of birds and all their feather structures. There's always like a lot to work with birds, and there's so many fun visual challenges to kind of work through as you're trying to make an artwork of them. I also really like making art of birds because I learn so much about them as I am making the artwork, more than if I just was bird watching. It takes a really long time to make the pieces that I make, so while I'm sort of staring at the reference photos that I'm using, I learn a lot about them and I really memorize the different markings they have or the shape of their bill and that kind of thing. So yeah, I feel like I get a lot out of it as well. I'm an environmental scientist, so I don't get to go in the field that much, unfortunately. So I also really like to make art of birds so that I can kind of connect with them a bit more in my day-to-day life than I might be able to through my job. I also like to donate all the profits that I make through selling my artwork to different conservation and land management groups. So I feel like I'm giving back to the environment.
Freya has a few different art techniques that she likes to play around with.
I do art as a hobby, so it's really about having fun and exploring. At the moment, the main technique that I'm using is sort of a mixture of using watercolor paint and a dotting technique, where I use a really fine tip ink pen to dot thousands and thousands of tiny dots to sort of draw the bird. When you step back, you sort of can't see the individual dots. You can sort of see the areas of shadow and light that are created by all the dots. And then the color sort of comes through from the watercolor paint. Another technique that I really love is cyanotype printing, which is a type of cameraless photography that uses sunlight and shadow, and it makes these really beautiful blue prints. So I've been playing around a bit with combining the dotting watercolor technique and the cyanotype technique lately, which has been really fun. I really love just playing around with detail and color and light and science in different ways. One of my favorite artworks is one of the first dotting artworks that I did a couple of years ago of two galahs. Earlier this year, I was lucky to have it chosen as an artwork for the Wingspan board game fan art pack. So if there's any fans of Wingspan out there, you might find one of my pieces. I always go out birding as much as I can, and I think watching the birds is a really important way to understand how they move and how they act, and you get a sense of the bird and you develop a relationship with the bird. Unfortunately, my photography skills aren't as amazing as all of those incredible bird photographers out there. So usually I will approach one of the bird photographers that I know and ask them if they're happy for me to use one of their photos for an artwork, or sometimes I'll purchase the rights to use a photograph for an artwork so that I can, you know, get a really good reference photo to work from. Some people are really amazing and can just sit and watch the bird and draw, you know, from a live bird, but I find they move around a bit too much for me. So I usually go off the reference photos, but I think it is important to spend time with them and watch them.
In the show notes, you will find links to Freya's account so that you can check out her artwork. Freya has a special place in her heart for waterfowl. Waterfowl is a group name for ducks, geese, and swans. In the science world, it's known as the Anatidae family, and there are approximately 20 Australian birds in this group and another 10 that are introduced or vagrants. Here's what Freya has learned about the nesting habits of some of these birds.
Ducks in particular are just so accessible, and they're such familiar birds that I think we take them for granted sometimes, but they have so much subtle beauty to them that I really find them special. I finished an artwork this year for Vicky Oster, who is an incredible and lovely ornithologist who has been on this podcast a couple of times now, I think. And that piece included an Australian wood duck, a Pacific black duck, and a female chestnut teal. And all three of them have such beautiful colours and patterns. They have lovely flashes of iridescence on their wings. And the male chestnut teal has a really gorgeous dark green colour on its head. Pacific black ducks are a bit more flexible with their nesting habits, but they and chestnut teals and Australian wood ducks all like to nest in tree hollows. And sometimes that's almost 10 metres high in the tree, which is really not what you might expect for a water bird. It's kind of funny to think of them with their feet hopping around on branches and that kind of thing. The chicks from ducks are what we call precocial, which means that they are sort of ready to get out and about in the world really soon after they hatch. But to get out into the world and down to the water, they have to jump down this huge drop from this hollow onto the ground, which is the craziest thing to watch and probably looks really scary if you don't know what's going on. But they're actually really resilient chicks. So they might jump 10 meters down onto the ground, onto some soft grass, and just get up and waddle off to the water, which is crazy. Another really interesting thing that a lot of these ducks do is something called egg dumping, where they lay some of their eggs in a nest, usually of the same species, and also have their own nest that they use. So sometimes they have really large broods because other birds have been coming and laying eggs in their nest. So they end up with this huge collection of little chicks to take care of that aren't necessarily their own. And it's thought that this might be a way to improve survival chances. So you're sort of literally not putting all your eggs in one basket. You know, if something happened to your nest, maybe some of your chicks somewhere else are fine. So that's a really fascinating piece of biology about these birds as well.
Those are some fun facts. Shout out to Vicky Austin, who will be on the pod later this season to talk about recording bird calls. To share a quick story of my own, I was recently walking in a local reserve when ducks started to fall from the sky. Ducklings of the Australian wood duck, also known as the Maine duck, had begun to leave their nest located high up in a tree. Their parents were on the ground calling to them. I was totally captivated by the way that they plopped onto the ground from such a great height, seemingly uninjured. Birds are the best. Hey, have you ever stopped to wonder why ducks and other birds have different coloured feathers, or what their feathers are actually made of? I definitely have, and so have Weekend Birder listeners Amir, Jeff, Kylie, Lulu and Rohan, who requested this topic. Through her birdwatching adventures, art practice and curious scientist mind, Freya has become fascinated with this topic as well, and she's here to share her smarts with us.
Colour in birds is caused by two main things, pigments or what we call a structural colour. So this applies for feathers. I'll mostly be talking about feathers, but can also apply to eggshells or beaks or skin. Feathers are made up of keratin, which is transparent. It's the same thing that kind of makes up our fingernails. And so for pigments, you can have pigments within the colour, or you can have sort of a structural, you can have a structure to the feather that causes colour. Pigments are a coloured substance. It's usually a really large and complex molecule. So we're talking at a, you know, microscopic level here. And pigments will either reflect or absorb wavelengths or colours. So there's two main types of pigments that we find in birds. There's melanins, which is the same as what humans have in our hair and skin. And that's the most common pigment that you find in birds. It can be made by birds within their own cells. So that gives us a lot of the browns, greys, blacks, reddish browns, yellow browns, pale yellows. And one really interesting thing about melanin is that it makes feathers more resistant to wear and abrasion. So you'll often see that the tips of flight feathers will be a really dark colour as they have a greater concentration of melanin, so that the feathers sort of are a bit more resistant to the strain that they might go undergo with flying. Another really common type of pigment is carotenoids. And carotenoids can cause really bright reds or oranges or yellows. These molecules have to be acquired through the bird's diet, so the bird can't make them. So they might get them from fungi or algae, cyanobacteria, plants, insects. And they might, you know, eat these pigments, and then their body might alter them a bit and then show up, you know, in their coloration. There's a few other different types of pigments. So there's porphyrins, which give us some of the browns in owls, can also give some pinks and reds. In really rare cases, it can cause some greens or purples, but that's extremely rare. And one interesting thing about porphyrins is that it fluoresces bright pink under UV light. So it's an interesting fact about a lot of owls. They can fluoresce if you shine the right light on them. And another pigment is Psittaca fulvens, which is found in parrots. And so that gives us a lot of the bright reds and oranges and yellows that we see.
Wow. I never made the link between darker bird feathers and stronger wings due to the high amount of melanin. And I also didn't know that birds can only make bright red, orange and yellow feathers through their diet. That is very cool. Freya says that there are also structural colours. These are caused by the light refracting or reflecting because of the microscopic structure of the feather. This causes humans to see different wavelengths of colour.
Blue is a really good example. Blue pigments are often really toxic or unstable, or it's just a really large molecule. So it's really rare to find it in like flora or fauna. So a lot of the blues that you see are actually what we call structural blues. So structural blues are caused by the arrangement of the keratin of the feather structures and lots of tiny little air bubbles within the keratin. So when the light passes through the keratin and hits the air bubbles, it kind of bends the light around in such a way that it scatters back to us only the shortest wavelengths, which are sort of blue and UV colours. And of course, UV is invisible to humans, but so we end up seeing the blues shine back at us. So structural colours don't have any inherent colour themselves. So for example, like a blue structural blue feather gets wet, it might not have its colour until it dries out again. Similarly, if you lit the feather from underneath, you might not see that blue because the light's coming from a different direction and not passing through that keratin structure in the same way. But a pigmented colour doesn't have that kind of directionality. It would be the same colour regardless of what direction you look at it.
Okay, you got me there, Freya. Mind blown. So in summary, pigmented coloured feathers are feathers that are, for lack of a better term, dyed that colour. Structural feathers aren't actually the colour that you and I can see. We see a certain colour because of the way that the light interacts with the feathers. The blue feathers that we see on a superb fairy wren or an azure kingfisher aren't actually blue. They are structured in a way that when the light bounces, our eyes see blue. Interestingly, a bird can also have a combination of pigmented and structural feathers.
One really interesting example, so a lot of the time you get combinations of structural colours and pigments. So green is quite rare as a pigment. Normally it is a combination of a structural blue and a yellow pigment. So our wild budgerigar is a really good example of that. So it's got a yellow pigment layer in the feather and then a layer of a keratin air matrix, which gives us our structural blue. And underneath that, there's a layer of melanin. And so the yellow and blue sections reflect to give us this bright green. The melanin underneath absorbs all the other wavelengths. And so it makes the green really bright because it's not getting mixed up with some of the other colors that might have been reflecting back. So iridescence is quite similar to structural blues. It's seen as a really bright and intense reflection of light that can look really metallic and can shift as you look at it. So it's really fascinating to look at. It's evolved independently a few times in different types of birds. So there's a few different ways that it happens, actually, which is really fascinating. Generally speaking, it's caused by a really specific arrangement of melanin, air, and keratin so that other colors, not just blue, can be reflected. There might be multiple layers of keratin and melanin, and then keratin and melanin, so that the light bounces off different layers as it goes through those different layers, and it will reinforce different wavelengths depending on which layer it's reflecting. There's so many wavelengths reflecting around. If they align, it'll create a really bright color. But if they sort of cancel each other out, it might just look black. And so that's why when you see a bit of iridescence on a bird, sometimes it's so bright and shiny, but other times you can't even see it at all and it might look quite dull. So yeah, it's a really, really fascinating property that certain birds have developed.
As Freya was talking about iridescence, I was thinking about the feathers of bronzewings, the glossy ibis, emerald dove, welcome swallow, and the black-necked stork. We are so lucky in Australia to have such a variety of birds and feathers. It breaks my brain in a wonderful way to think about what Freya just told us, and I'm left wondering, can birds see the same or different colours to me?
Birds can see a wider range of wavelengths than human eyes can. So with humans, we have what's called the visual spectrum, which is the colours that we're able to see. Birds can actually see a wider amount of colours that humans aren't able to see, and that's at both ends of the spectrum. So they can see more UV wavelengths and more sort of infrared wavelengths than humans can. Humans also have three types of colour receptor cells in our eyes, whereas birds have more. And so they can see really different colours to us. They might be seeing different patterns on the birds to what we can see. So it's really fascinating to think about the role that colour plays for birds and how we perceive birds could be completely different to what they're seeing. Colour plays a really important role with birds, obviously, because they put so much effort into their appearance and their coloration. It plays an important role in social signalling. So they are showing what species they are, they're showing how healthy they are, they might be showing if they're male or female, they might be communicating something about themselves. And it's also really important for predator avoidance. So that means, you know, using camouflage or distracting patterns maybe, or counter shading or flashes of color to make sure that they're not getting predated by other birds or other animals.
Whoa. There's a whole world of colour and pattern out there that we will never be able to see, let alone imagine. But birds can see it. They see it every day. I wonder what those colours and patterns look like. To blow our minds one last time, Freya is going to tell us a little bit about the incredible detail that makes up the form of a feather.
If you think of a typical bird feather, like a flight feather, you think about the shaft in the middle that's really strong. And coming off that, there's lots of little branches, which are called barbs. And off those barbs are more little branches called barbules. And they actually can sort of zip together and have little hooks to hold the feather together really well. A lot of the coloration that we see in birds is in those barbs and barbules and the really specific structures and colors that are within those feathers. So this is happening at a really small scale and can cause such incredible colours and patterns.
One of the things that I love about watching birds is paying attention to the small details. I will definitely be paying more attention to bird feathers after listening to Freya. To finish, Freya wants to tell us about living and birding in the Blue Mountains of New South Wales on Darug and Gundungurra country.
The Blue Mountains are a World Heritage Area, so there's a lot of really amazing spots to go, and there's a lot of different variation within the mountains, so you can kind of pick anywhere, really, and you'll find something great. One of my favorite spots to go is Blue Gum Swamp in Winmalee. There's a really beautiful blue gum forest there and lots and lots of undergrowth. The last time I was there, I saw gang gang cockatoos, which is really special. But there's so many honey eaters and other birds there. So I also saw a crested shrike tit, lots of New Holland honey eaters, eastern spinebills, scarlet honey eaters, lots of cockatoos and rosellas. Lyrebirds are everywhere down there. So that's a really special place that I love to go. Another spot that I really like is Glenbrook Lagoon, which is obviously really good for water birds, but it's also got a lot of forest around it. So you get a lot of forest birds too. You get the kind of classic water birds like the Pacific black duck and the coots and the swamp hens, which will often just run up to you as well, because sometimes I think people feed them. But you also can see egrets and herons. I saw some hardheads the other day, great cormorant, little black cormorant, darters, kingfishers, grebes. So it's a really lovely spot. In Wentworth Falls, there's a really nice spot near Lincoln's Rock, which is on King's Tableland Road, near the end of Chester Road. There's a few fire trails around there that you can walk along, and there's a lot of casuarinas, so you see a lot of glossy black cockatoos there. I've also seen yellow-tailed black cockatoos, and the last time I was there, I saw a beautiful fire tail, which was really special. And it's a really beautiful spot for views as well. So if you're not from the mountains, it's a really nice spot to stop and have a bit of lunch or something and look at the views. I'd say one of the quickest way to learn about birds is to spend time with other birders. There's so much you can learn from other people, and sometimes things just click when you are with that person, and they'll identify a bird and they can explain why they think that it is that bird, or the special markings or sound or whatever it is that they use. So sometimes it's so much quicker to just learn from other people, and there's so many amazing bird experts out there. A shout out to the Blue Mountains Bird Observers group, which is a group in the Blue Mountains you can join that have some incredibly knowledgeable people. Have fun with it. Do what is fun for you and what gives you the most joy, and that's the way you'll learn the most.
I've added the birding spots that Freya talked about to the Weekend Birder Google map. This map lists all of the places mentioned by Weekend Birder guests, and a link is in the show notes. I've also added links to the Blue Mountain Bird Observers website and Freya's social media accounts. Many thanks to Freya for taking time out of her busy schedule to chat with us. What a talent. Keep your eye out for a giveaway on Instagram if you are listening to this episode the week that it goes live. And many thanks to everyone who's been leaving a rating on Spotify and leaving a review on Apple Podcasts. I read each and every one because your feedback means a lot to me. And your rating and review helps keep Weekend Birder on the radar. In fact, it's regularly in the top 5 nature podcasts of Australia. That's because of you, and I'm so grateful. Speak to you again soon.